Hello, everyone. This is Dave Goulas, president of EasyDC 3PL, and thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast, where we spotlight small business owners, entrepreneurs, startup founders, and we have real conversations about their journey, what it's really like, and what they've learned along the way. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. I'm your host, Dave Goulas of EasyDC 3PL. And this week, my guest is the founder and CEO of CS Recruiting, Charlie Safro. Welcome, Charlie.
Thanks, Dave. I'm excited to be here and chat with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time. If you could, for everyone listening, can you just tell them what CS Recruiting is and how it came to be?
Absolutely. So CS Recruiting is a third-party recruiting firm, and we focus exclusively in logistics, supply chain, and transportation. So we recruit professionals, help companies find the right talent for their needs as they grow and scale and change over people. So we work across the entire United States, partnering with 3PLs. We partner with asset providers. On the shipper side, we work with manufacturers and distributors, and then, of course, technology companies and other providers to the industry.
Okay. And so you've been in the recruiting industry quite a long time.
I sure have. I'm going to date myself, but I started CS Recruiting back in 2010, so coming up on 14 years. And then prior to that, I had about 4 years of experience as an in-house recruiter for a transportation technology company. So really learned the business through lots of observation, conversations, questions. And then as I built my own business, really had a chance to operate it and apply my learnings and continue learning as we've gone through the years.
Okay. So when you're in the corporate company doing in-house, what made you decide to strike out on your own?
So it wasn't really a decision, and that's probably the most interesting thing about my entrepreneurship journey. I think a lot of entrepreneurs have this vision and they have a business plan and they know how they're going to approach building this dream. And mine was kind of, I don't want to say it was by accident because it was probably the best accident that ever happened to me, but it wasn't my intention. I was at a transportation technology company doing recruiting. So I knew the business, I knew the competitive landscape, I knew what talent looked like in this industry. That company sold. And so I stayed on with them as like a freelance recruiter, finished up a couple searches I'd been working on. And then one thing led to another where I was on LinkedIn and started getting opportunities to do recruiting for external companies. And I was very content as a solopreneur. At this point, I had just had my third son. Life was hectic, but I was enjoying being self-employed and taking on the projects that were interesting to me. And then I had that moment where it was like, this is it. You're either going to make that decision to embrace this opportunity and scale and run with it or walk away before you fail and underdeliver. And that's really that moment where I just committed to, let's see what we can do with this. There's clearly a niche. There's clearly a need. So put my head down and really turned it into a company. And then obviously, as I added people, focused on the culture component, the engagement component, and really determined to just make our company culture the best it could be.
Okay. So clearly, you've been doing it, like you said, 14 years. Yeah, company's very successful, grown. You have, if I'm not mistaken, like 40 or so employees, right? So it's easy to look now and say, you know, wow, like look what she's built. But in the very beginning, what was that like, you know, taking that leap and just trying to get the business off the ground?
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, I started, as I said, by myself, and I quickly realized that there were things that I was good at, and then there were things that I was not good at that I was forcing myself to do as a business owner. And so I like building relationships. I like the marketing piece of it. I do not like financials. I do not like the legal side of the business. And so my first hire was actually my husband, who was an entrepreneur himself. He had many years of experience as a freight broker and then on the technology side of the industry. And that's his forte. He loves to build businesses. So it gave me the opportunity to really prove our service by being the face of the company, being a revenue generator, being out there on the floor with my team, operating in every position to really understand what it took. And then as the years went on, elevated into a leadership role where I really assumed that responsibility, as a visionary and as the CEO of the firm.
Okay. And it's hard enough, being an entrepreneur and growing a startup, but as a mom and just having your third son, like how did that impact the situation for you?
I learned how to multitask and hustle like never before. So I think any working parent agrees. It's like we know our priorities and we fit things in when we can. And I think it was probably that mindset was probably what got me to that point of success. But I will also reflect back and say it's a bit of a weakness that when you are an entrepreneur, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Dave, like we will do anything for our business. It's my fourth child. And so if I had a parenting priority, a school play or a basketball game, and it interrupted my work day or my flow of work, in my mind, it's like, okay, then I'll just stay up late or get up early tomorrow. Like I will make time to do what the business needs. So I think my perseverance and that kind of mindset of, I'm in the checkout aisle of Target. I've got 2 minutes where I'm standing here. I might as well send an email or I might as well take advantage of these 2 minutes. It's that entrepreneurial mindset that you're always thinking about the business. And like I said, I mean, it's hard to find balance when you live like that. But I think as the years have gone on, what's helped me most is hiring the right people to support the areas where I don't thrive. So the work I'm doing is meaningful and I'm in my sweet spot. So I can find a bit more balance.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure so many entrepreneurs can relate to that. And I find too, as I'm like older in my 40s, like it used to be a badge of honor in terms of how hard you could work and how many hours when you're younger. And now I'm so much more about doing what's most important and scheduling and structuring to complete high value tasks rather than just trying to be everything to everybody. Do you kind of find that the same thing?
I totally agree. And when you frame it up like that and you start to think about what you're capable of and what your time is worth, it really comes into picture. Like, this is not, this is what I need to delegate and this is what I actually need to do and lean into your strengths that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, another thing I read in a magazine article that you were featured in, you said that you attribute much of your success to being active on LinkedIn at the right time on the platform. Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, so I joined LinkedIn probably 2009 or 10, right before I started the business. And at that time, I mean, it was a very different platform back then. And this kind of goes into my story about juggling and being a new mom and also an entrepreneur. But what I did in those early months was I just focused really on connecting with relevant people. So my industry was very, I knew my industry, I knew the decision makers in my industry, and I would have a, I had a newborn at one point who would get up 3, 4 times in the middle of the night and need a bottle, and I would take advantage of that time and I would sit there. And this is going back like maybe I had a flip phone, but I have memories of being on a desktop computer, and just connecting with people at 2 in the morning, at 4 in the morning, and like every waking minute that I was up for the baby, I was on LinkedIn, to the point that LinkedIn's security team reached out to me and actually they like froze my account for a period of time, thinking this is like before AI bots, but thinking I had someone, in the Philippines that was working 24 hours and always on connecting. And I literally had a conversation. I was like, no, this is me. I have your platform open on some device at all times. And it got me to the point where I don't think a lot of people realize this, but you max out your connections on LinkedIn. You can only have 30,000 connections. So I got to the point where I added 30,000 connections and by connecting with people, it drove business. As a recruiter, we're looking for hiring companies, but also job seekers, active or passive job seekers. And so those connections opened up conversations and relationships, and that's really what helped us build our brand and our reputation and drive the business. So it was worth all those 2 a.m. Emails and connection points to get to where I was.
Okay. Yeah. And I, so now you have something like almost 50,000 followers, I think, when I looked here.
So maybe 3 years ago, just maybe during the pandemic, I started using LinkedIn a little differently. Like I said, I used it really to connect with people or find decision makers early in my usage. But then for years, like my rep at LinkedIn had told me, you should put content out there. You should engage more with other people's content. And I think that's one thing that, we can so easily say, like, we don't have time to do that. Like, I don't have time for social media during the day if I'm focused on the business. But I started finding my voice about 3 years ago and really advocating for employees, but also using the opportunity to be a thought leader for other leaders when it comes to employee engagement, retention, company culture. And so now my time on LinkedIn is spent engaging with content. So putting content out there, commenting and engaging with other people's content. It's amazing how much I can give and receive on that platform every day just by devoting time to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I checked out some of your content on LinkedIn, and one thing that struck me as just genius, and it resonated with me, is a commercial you filmed, and it's called "We Give a Shit." So can you talk about what would that was like?
So I think that is one thing that has always driven our business and the way we treat our clients and our job seeker candidates, but more importantly, the way we treat the people on our team. And I think the last couple of years, like we're living in this world where people want to say, like, I don't care what people think, or I don't give a shit. And we're the opposite. Like, we do care. We do care about the impact we make. We do care about influencing people and providing ideas and, actionable items that can help them move in the right direction. And so that was the basis of that commercial, that our whole team, we give a shit. I mean, it's, some people get offended that we're swearing, but I feel like that is the we care. Like, we care about the people we work with, and we demonstrate that through the time we commit to them, the effort we put into it. But just thinking about we go through the motions, especially in the hiring world, of thinking about people as like cogs in a machine or a warm body. But we're all humans, and when you take the time to get to know people behind their title, that creates that connection, and that's what we care about, is creating that connection and then really helping those people feel seen and heard. So yeah, it was kind of a bold statement to put out there, but I stand behind it. Like, we do give a shit. We're not the company that doesn't give a shit about others. We do, and that's what makes us successful.
Yeah, and that message too, is so relevant today, because with the rise of technology and the social media, and even now the kids, like all my kids, all they know is growing up with social media and all that stuff. So sometimes too, it can, and now with AI, right? And the rise of AI, sometimes it can seem like the human touch is sort of lost in all this technological advancement. Is that something you see out there as well?
So true. And it's if you would have told me 10 years ago that we would need to explain in emails that we are a human, like, I wouldn't have believed you. But I feel like that is something, I take the time on LinkedIn. Anyone who reaches out to me, I will write back to them, and it's me. It's not my virtual assistant in the Philippines. It's not my AI, tool or widget. But I will say, like, I am a human writing you back. This is not a bot, and I may not be able to connect with you, but I'm going to follow you. I hope you'll follow me, and we can, continue the relationship. So, yeah, I think it's all about just seeing people as humans and also like being proud to be a human in this world of bots that we're starting to live in.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing too that you mentioned is just you've seen a shift towards like the future of work in terms of being employers being what's the way you worded it, more humanized and I guess leading with the heart. Is that?
Yeah, and that, I mean, that ties in so closely to the work we do as recruiters. We have so, you know, we've taken on so many searches over the years where the clients call us and like they need to fill a vacancy. They have a spot on their team that they need to get a warm body in. And the way we think about recruiting is, you know, it's certainly the process of attracting and evaluating talent, but I say that you can't recruit if you can't retain. And I think that that is the bigger message. And the good news is I'm starting to see more leaders embrace that. It's not just about getting that warm body in and then putting them to work and never looking back. It's about nurturing these people, caring for them, engaging with them, investing in them. Those qualities are not only there for that retention piece, but it's all cyclical and they drive back to why people will be interested in your company and joining your team. So we're a different type of agency where we're not just looking to work with companies that have a lot of vacancies because of high turnover or you know, people going through the revolving door. We want to work with companies because they know how to take care of their employees. And because of that, their employees are productive, they're working hard, they're impacting the bottom line. And they're growing and they're scaling and they're creating new service lines. And those are the positions that are most fun for us to work on, are more of those growth opportunities or even backfilling a position because someone else was promoted, versus constantly looking to fill a vacancy because there was turnover.
Yeah, and one thing too that we've seen, and it's a big topic now, is more so about who, not how, and it's a, like really the right people are the answer, and it's like when you have like a top performer and top talent, someone that has is so meaningful to your business that you have to approach them differently, not just with a cookie cutter type of corporate approach. I mean, are you seeing a shift in that in today's environment with companies being more creative towards what they can do to keep their top talent happy?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's still a lot of education that needs to be put out there because I think a lot of companies automatically default to that's going to cost money or we need a budget for that. And yes, there are a lot of things you can do for your employees that do require a budget that are going to, you know, show your investment in them and strengthen them in the company. But there's a lot of things that are very easy and free. And you know, it's the idea of saying thank you or recognizing. One of the things that we do a lot is we recognize the little wins, but we also recognize a loss and, you know, lean into like how our employee feels if they put in all that time and effort and then they don't win that business or they didn't make that placement, but the work was there and it was good work. And so I think that all comes down to, you know, seeing people as humans and going out of your way, the little things. Like I send my team a lot of handwritten notes throughout the year, just words of encouragement. If somebody does something that makes my life easier or that comes across my plate, like sending them a quick Slack and just letting them know I appreciate them. That's what engagement is really about. And that's what drives the company culture and the whole retention practice, you know, for any organization.
Yeah, so true, right? It's like those little things where just like you said, being human and letting people know you really care, even if it's just a note or even calling someone, just to check in and really listening to what they have to say.
Exactly, because we've been, you know, we've been employees too. And I know I've been in different positions early in my career where I felt totally invisible at a company and wondered what my purpose was and why I showed up to work hard every day until I stopped working hard because I didn't feel cared for. And then I've also been part of organizations that truly treated every employee with respect and appreciation and equality. And those were the companies that I wanted to work hard for and show up at. So a lot of times I just put myself back into the employee shoes. We've all been there at some point, and really reflect on what communication do they need? What do they need from a support standpoint? What do they need to know about their own career here to feel fulfilled and want to stay? But I think that's a big secret of leadership, is just having that empathy and compassion, but really putting yourself in others' shoes to see what they see and feel what they feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing too, tying into that, that I noticed was a big part of what you do is work-life balance. And if I'm reading this right, you instituted a policy, no email after 6 p.m.
So that's an interesting story. Kind of what I was saying before, like I find these pockets of time to do my work, and I know when I'm productive and when I can get into, a good flow mode, and it's not always from 9 to 5. And so for many years, part of my balance was checking out of the workday when I needed to, caring for my family and my kids, and then checking back in when I put my kids to bed. And what I would do a lot was send emails at 9 p.m. or 1 a.m. or Saturday morning. And for me, I was thinking, I'm getting my work done. I'm giving my team the responses they need or the information to move this forward. This is the time that I choose to work. What I didn't realize until some brave team members spoke up was that I was stressing other people out by doing that. And that's probably an area where I didn't put myself in their shoes early enough to realize that when your boss sends you an email on a Saturday morning, your heart skips a beat. It doesn't matter what the email says, you feel compelled to read it, to digest it, to respond to it. And that's when I just had to reframe it, because that was not my intention at all. My intention was getting my work done and not holding anyone else back because I was delayed on emails or projects. But what it was doing was stressing people out, and they were feeling like they had to work the hours I was working. And so somebody spoke up about it. I was able to really put myself in their shoes and see that perspective. And as a company, we created a policy that there are no internal emails from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. unless it's an absolute emergency. But I can't even think of a situation. Maybe 3 times I've prefaced an email like, sorry, this is after hours. I just want to make sure you saw this immediately. But it's really helped. Like, we're all in important businesses, we're all needed. But the truth is that most things can wait till the next day, and my procrastination should not be someone else's emergency. And thanks to, schedule send being a function on Gmail and Outlook, like I can still work at 9 p.m. They just are not receiving my email until 8 or 9 the next morning. And so it was just changing our habits, and it's a small shift from a policy standpoint, but the impact it's made just sends so many messages. Like, we respect you, and we want you to have this work-life balance, and we're not going to interfere with it. Just give us your all when you're, in working hours, and know that we'll respect your time off. And I think it's also really important for mental wellness. Like, you're not constantly on the clock, or we don't expect our employees to constantly be thinking about work.
Yeah, and that's the first time I've ever heard of a policy like that. And then even hearing you explain that, it makes so much sense, and I can see the type of difference that that can make for people.
Yeah, and I think our team just, it's like they're more mindful of when they work, and they're more mindful of how they work. And I think it just brings them a little bit more peace of mind. Like, when you show up for the workday, you're gonna work hard and you're gonna be on. But when you're off, like, we want you to be off. Everyone needs to reset. And we've seen team members burn out over the years. We felt burnout ourselves as leaders, and that's what we're trying to prevent. So it's a small step, but it makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Another thing too that I find so important in my own life is just the self-care and like the routine. And I noticed on your profile that you're a yogi. Can you talk about how yogi has helped you overall in your mental wellness and your business performance?
So I the year I started my business, I became an entrepreneur. I found yoga as just a practice that I was never familiar with before, and I had my third and final son, and I feel like those three things really shaped my future trajectory. I was a runner before, and I would get up and I would run. And when I reflect back, like, I really didn't like running. I did it because I knew it was healthy for me and I wanted to move my body and have some exercise, but I didn't enjoy it. And I always thought yoga was like, for people who like granola and hang out in the woods. And I just didn't associate with that. And then I went to a yoga class and I was like, okay, I could see how this is, it feels good. It's good for my body. And even more importantly, it's good for my mind. And even to this day, like that 1 hour of yoga that I do 5 or 6 days a week, it's probably the only hour of my day where I don't have my phone and I'm not distracted and I'm not needed. Now, granted, I practice yoga at 6 a.m. usually, so hopefully I wouldn't be needed at that time of day anyway, but it's become like that sacred place. And even though when you're practicing yoga, you're supposed to let the thoughts vanish, it's where I have my best thoughts. It's where I kind of organize my priorities and my problems and think through what my day ahead is going to look like. And so I think yoga then led me to being a daily meditator. So I meditate for about 20 minutes every day. And it's those two small windows that keep me balanced. Like it allows me to go, 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 knowing that I'll have that rest and that time for me and time to slow down. And I think everyone needs some sort of outlet like that, whether it's exercise or driving around or sitting and watching TV. And like you need that outlet to know that you're going to get that break, that mental break.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually learned to meditate during the pandemic too, and that's probably been the most important thing I've done for my just overall well-being in terms of
Right?
mental wellness,
Yeah.
balance. Don't ever lose my temper anymore. It's been amazing. So glad
Yeah.
to hear your story there too.
Yeah. And I like to think about it like, I don't have to meditate. I get to meditate. And when you change your mindset that way and you think like, how lucky am I that I get to take a 20-minute break from my mind right now and that my mind and my body will pay me back indirectly and thank me for this. Like it's a privilege. And so once you commit to it and prioritize it, it starts to just become part of your routine like anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So being that you've been in the logistics industry for over a decade, what are some of the biggest changes you've seen from back when you started in 2010 up to how companies are running their operations now?
Oh man, I mean, this year is so interesting. And we were just having a conversation about this as a team yesterday. How, when I joined the industry, I mean, one noteworthy difference was there was not a lot of diversity at all, not a lot of women. Those first few years where I went to conferences, there would be women's lunches with 20 women out of 400 or 500. And I've seen the industry evolve so much in a great direction since then. Now these women's lunches have a couple hundred women, and it's probably 30% women, but it's a lot better than 2% or 5%. So I think that's one very obvious change. I think companies are also starting to pay attention to that retention piece and people and culture and that old school idea of freight brokerages feeling like fraternity houses is starting to evolve, and just respecting and appreciating colleagues and leadership a little more, and bottom up and top down. I also think I was in this industry early when there was so much excitement and potential and so much money coming into this industry, so many new companies that were being founded and startups, and the excitement around technology. And that really peaked for many, many years. And I think this year is the first year we've started to see the decline. I just read an article that like 1,500 freight brokerages have closed in 2023 just because of the lack of freight and the lack of demand. There's a lot less capital coming into the industry right now because supply chain is, it will always be here, but consumers aren't buying like they used to. And so it's been a really interesting ride. I feel like I've been on, been in an industry that's gotten so much positive attention and people are so intrigued. And now for the first time, there's a lot of fear in the market. I think there's a lot of fear in every market, but that's kind of what I'm sensing is just companies are a little more gun shy to invest, to grow because it's things are unpredictable. And we all lived through the pandemic and we survived. So I know we will bounce back and the market will change again, but definitely feeling a lot of fear in our market today, which did not exist 5, 6 years ago.
Okay. And so we have 2024 right around the corner. What are some things that you look for and maybe some trends that you see emerging as we head into 2024? And like you said, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear in the market. It's obviously an election year too. Going to be a very chaotic year, it looks like. What are some things that you see upcoming for logistics?
We are starting to see companies hire opportunistically again, and that's a great sign. These are usually leadership positions that are created because of growth or even diversification. So, asset-based carriers starting up a brokerage or even a 3PL expanding, that may traditionally offer transportation solutions, expanding into the warehouse and distribution space. So, a lot of times when companies make those decisions, they need one really strong leader who has that expertise. And that slowed down for many months, and we're starting to see that come back. So, that's exciting. There's been so much trucking capacity this year that we have not had a lot of hiring for operational positions or any carrier sales or capacity type positions. We're starting to see those come back. So that's good news that freight volume is starting to rebound. I think we're probably still at a low, but just the conversations and observations are starting to get me optimistic that companies are back to their hiring plans, taking their hiring freezes off and really starting to think about growing and scaling and having the right team in place.
Okay. And being that you deal with so many companies and place so many applicants, given that we're in this type of market, like what would be your advice to someone that's, in the logistics industry and is looking for maybe like a mid or a more senior level position and just some things that they can do to stand out or to land a better role in this type of environment?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be your own best advocate and really understand the greater industry and the different opportunities that exist once you've stepped foot in the industry. One thing that we're seeing, and this is in hiring as a whole, but specifically in our industry, is a lot more focus on skills-based hiring. And those skills are generally soft skills, not necessarily like technical skills. And so I think people need to be able to identify their areas of strength and be that advocate for themselves. So soft skills that companies are starting to prioritize are things that are in your DNA. They're your personal traits. So you're reliable, you're strategic, you're resourceful, you're communicative. Those are the things that you need to be leading with because that is who you are. You can learn new skills, you can be trained on new technologies, but when you think about being, a fit or an add for a company's culture, those are the things that you will carry with you from role to role, company to company, and that's what makes you you. And so, we're educating more clients to think about hiring this way, and I'm starting to see that shift, and hopefully we'll just see more of it in the upcoming year. But have your resume ready, network, 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 and know your value and stand up for yourself.
Yeah, love it. Absolutely. All right. So, Charlie, if people want to get in touch, whether it's a company that needs to fill positions or someone else that's looking for work, what's the best way people can get in touch with you?
On LinkedIn is where you can find us. So you can either follow me on LinkedIn for a taste of some of that content, or our company page where we post a lot of the positions we're working on, a lot of industry news, hiring tips. And like you said, if you are a job seeker or a hiring company, we'd love to hear from you if you've got interest and experience in our industry.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Charlie, for being here. We appreciate it. We'll put your information on the screen below. That's all the time we have for now, and we will see you next week.
Hello again, Dave Goulas here. Thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. If you like what you heard on today's episode and you got value from it, please click the link below to subscribe so you'll be notified of future episodes when they drop. If you would like to be a guest on a future show, you can also click the link below, or you can email us at info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. That's info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.